ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Canto 3, Chapter 31, Text 47. Tasmanna karya santraso na karpanyam na sambhramam budva jiva katim dhiro Mukta Sangash Charad Iha Tasmana Karya Santraso Nakarpanyam Nasambramaha Budva Jivakatim Dhiro Mukta Sangash Charad Iha Tasmat, on account of death.
Not.
Karyaha
should be done.
Santrasaha, horror.
Not.
Karpanyam,
miserliness.
Not.
Sambrahmaha.
Eagerness for material gain.
Budva.
Realizing.
Jivakatim.
The true nature of the living entity.
Dhiraha.
Steadfast.
Mukta Sangaha.
Free from attachment.
Charet.
One should move about.
Iha.
In this world. Translation. Therefore. That's Tasmat. It's because the previous verse is speaking about death, so Prabhupada has translated it as on account of death. Then again, birth. So. Therefore, one should not view death with horror, nor have recourse to defining the body as soul, nor give way to exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. Realizing the true nature of the living entity, one should move about in the world free from attachment and steadfast in purpose. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A sane person who has understood the philosophy of life and death is very upset upon hearing of the horrible hellish condition of life in the womb of the mother or outside of the mother, but one has to make a solution to the problems of life. A sane man should understand the miserable condition of this material body without being unnecessarily upset. He should try to find out if there is a remedy. The remedial measures can be understood when one associates with persons who are liberated. It is described in Bhagavad Gita. One who engages in uninterrupted devotional service to the Lord, having surpassed the stringent laws of material nature, is understood to be situated in Brahman. Paragraph. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond the material creation. It is admitted, even by the impersonalists like Shankaracharya, that Narayana is transcendental to this material creation. As such, when one actually engages in the service of the Lord in various forms, either Narayana or Radha Krishna or Sitaram, he is understood to be on the platform of liberation. The Bhagavatam also confirms that liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position. Since a living entity is eternally the servitor of the Supreme Lord, when one is seriously and sincerely engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, that is the position of liberation. One should try to associate with a liberated person, and then the problems of life, namely birth and death, can be solved. Paragraph. While discharging devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, one should not be miserly. He should not unnecessarily show that he has renounced this world. Actually, renunciation is not possible. If one renounces his palatial building and goes to a forest, there is actually no renunciation because the palatial building is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the forest is also the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If he changes from one property to another, that does not mean that he renounces. He was never the proprietor of either, the palace or the forest. Renunciation necessitates renouncing the false understanding that one can lord it over material nature. When one renounces this false attitude and renounces the puffed up position that he is also God, that is real renunciation. Otherwise, there's no meaning of renunciation. Rupa Goswami advises that if one renounces anything which could be applied in the service of the Lord and does not use it for that purpose, that is called palgu vairagya, insufficient or false renunciation. Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, everything can be engaged in the service of the Lord. Nothing should be used for one's sense gratification. That is real renunciation. Nor should one unnecessarily increase the necessities of the body. We should be satisfied with whatever is offered and supplied by Krishna without much personal endeavor. We should spend our time executing devotional service in Krishna consciousness. That is the solution to the problem of life and death. So the chapter is Movements of the Living Entities, and it's a long chapter. Living entities have a long journey from birth to death and complications in between. So that's been thoroughly described. The previous verses describing the development of the body just prior to death, where eyesight goes and hearing goes, and the instruments of the body wear out, where one is incapable of perceiving, not just it's difficult, but so the soul, the conscious entity within the body, leaves the body. That's death. And then the last sentence, when one begins to view the physical body as one's very self, that is called birth. So along with the birth comes the false ego of identifying falsely with the covering of the soul. And then this is beginning tasmat. So we're getting three pieces of advice here by Kapila Dev. Na karya santraso. One should not view death with horror. Santraso. Well, commonly people do. And the reason is because of identification with the body, and if the body is taken, then I don't have any existence anymore. So it's viewed with horror. But one who has the understanding of the soul doesn't view that way. If one has heard this chapter properly. Still, we don't like it. And it's not not that the conclusion is you should look forward to it. The conclusion is it doesn't really affect the soul as any more than the different stages, birth, and the different stages before leading up to death. The soul is not affected if the consciousness of the soul is not identifying with the body any more than here's a sweater. And this morning I put the sweater on. And at the end of the day I'll take the sweater off. Oh, my sweater's gone. Not a big deal. Something else, and then something else, and then something else. So, if we're not identifying with the covering, then it's not a big deal. And if we are, then it's a big deal. So one shouldn't look upon death with horror, nor have recourse to defining the body as the soul. Karpanyam. Karpanya means being a miser. What's the characteristic of a miser? Yeah. And they just look at it. Oh, look at all that money. They don't do anything with it. They just like to look at it. Oh, I have so much. They don't use it for some beneficial purpose. They just like to look at it. I have so many, so much, and so on. So, commonly Prabhupada makes the contrast from the miser is the brahmana. And another word is kripana. Cripple-minded or miserly. Here is karpanya. Brahmana is very liberal. They receive something, they use something. Receive something, they use something. They receive something. They don't treasure it, or just keep it in their treasury and like to look at it. Not miserly. They're very liberal. Use things in beneficial ways. Being charitable is like that. So it's one of the duties of householders. You are to maintain the family, so something is needed to maintain the family. But part of that duty is not to be a miser, just count it. How many? Oh, look how much I have. I'm a householder. I'm a rich householder. Look at all that I have. It's something that I need and I charitably use or gift it to a Brahmana or a Vaishnava or to something, to Krishna in Krishna's service. And that's a qualified grihastha. That's grihastha's duty regardless of what their position is, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. So this is not Nakarya santraso na karpanyam. One should not be miserly. And in the translation, what Prabhupada has presented is, nor have recourse to defining the body as soul. So that's an interesting twist. What does that mean? Not have recourse to identifying the body as soul. So the body as self. If I think that this body is myself, naturally all kinds of other things, unwanted things will come. One of them is this tendency for miserliness. Because happiness is how many objects I have to bring my senses in contact with. And if I don't have objects, How am I going to get happiness? So I need objects to get happiness. It's just circular. And that comes from thinking of the body as the self. So then in the purport, Prabhupada is addressing what is real renunciation. Real renunciation isn't just giving things up. His example here is leave the palace and go to the forest. Renunciation. But whether it's the palace or the forest, it belongs to Krishna or belongs to Krishna. So, what's the renunciation? The real renunciation is the mistaken conception, just like I mentioned last night. You don't have to renounce your worldly possessions, just renounce the misconception that you have worldly possessions to renounce. They belong to you. So the palace doesn't belong to you, the forest doesn't belong to you. And if you think in terms of the body, this body as the self, then so many things are mine. That's what's produced from the body. That's what mine is. My family, my possessions, my bank account, my home, my car, my debts, my credit card, my. So this karpanyam, or miserliness of thinking this is mine and trying to find happiness from thinking this is mine, the root of it is the bodily conception. I and mine. Aham mameti. Janasya yoham aham mameti. Language of the Bhagavatam. So we can give up miserliness by giving up the bodily conception. That's how Prabhupada has translated that. Not karpanyam, not miserliness. These are nakarya santraso nakarpanam, nakarpanyam. Then na sambrahma. Brahma, B-H-R-A-M-A, what does that mean? One of the four defects of the conditioned soul is B-H-R-A-M-A. It's delusion. It's being bewildered. So some Brahma is the totality of being bewildered. So don't be bewildered. And how he's translated that is, nor give way to exaggeration in enjoying bodily necessities of life. So necessities of life. One way of thinking of necessities as life is I need air, need water, I need some fuel in the tank, need to eat something, I may need to rest, you know, when it's, and so on. The bodily necessities. When it's cold, I need something warm, and so on. So connected to the bodily conception, if I'm looking at those necessities of life as happiness, having them means happiness, not having them means unhappiness. And having lots of them makes lots of happiness. Lots of stuff. Lots of warm clothes and lots of this and that and the other thing. Big stockpiles of this and that and the other thing. And it's not totally disconnected with being miserly, but it's specifically trying to be the enjoyer of those objects. This brings delusion. trying to think of the classic when it comes to the four defects of the conditioned souls. As far as I can recall, it's something is there, but you don't see it. Like, if you're looking for something, you're looking for your car keys, or you're looking for your something. And you're looking, and you're looking, and you're looking, and you can't find it. And you go look into other places, you come back, and you look, and you look, and you can't find it. Someone comes and says, it's right there. There's your car keys. Right there. Where? Oh. So, seeing but not seeing. Seeing, but it doesn't connect with your cognition faculty. That's Brahma. So, necessities of connecting that to how Prabhupada has rendered it, necessities of life, the arrangement of God is that our necessities of life are there. Om Purnamadak Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachyate and Isavasyamidam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatyam Jigatena Tyaktena Vunjitaha. The Isha, the Supreme Lord, has made arrangements for our necessities of life. So that Brahma is not recognizing the connection, the delusion, the bewilderment, the incorrect comprehension of our situation is not recognizing these things are being provided by the Supreme Controller for my maintenance, for my necessities. If we recognize like that, then immediately there's the connection with the Supreme Lord, even when we're doing our necessities of life things. Consciously, the recognition is there. This is God's mercy. Not, let me go and enjoy. Here's these necessities. Whoopee. As a sense enjoyer might do. And going from one attempt to be the enjoyer to another attempt to be the enjoyer, another attempt to be the enjoyer. When we're not, we're the enjoyed. We're Prakriti, we're not Purusha. It's not our constitutional position. But all that comes, all this stems back to all the prior discussion is the soul's misidentifying the body to be the self, or the self to be the body. And thus, sambrahma. Not giving way to exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. So that's what not to do, what to do. Budva, realizing jivakatim. Jivakatim is the nature of the living entity. Jiva, we know, is a living entity. And gatim, gati, means goal or destination. So one who has intelligence, they realize the purpose of life. The soul self-realization is the purpose of life, not these other things. Realizing the true nature of the living entity, one should move about the world. Mukta Sangat. Liberated, or Sangha means association or attachment. Mukta Sangha is detachment. Chared, moving about. So, summarizing, what Kapila Deva is addressing to Devahuti is, one should go about life, necessities of life, whatever it is that one acquires in the course of life, and facing death. One should go about those in this detached position, performing the duties, understanding the real purpose, the real mission is self-realization. So while that real mission is awakened, necessities of life are there, facilities of life are there, the transformations of stages of life are there. That's just part of what life is, death included. The soul is transmigrating from this situation to that situation. So it's not with great fear or horror one looks at that eventuality. But focus instead goes to the process of self-realization, specifically and emphatically. Focus on the real identity. If we lose that real identity, so many things, so many unwanted things, besides repeated birth and death, all the things that happen subtly with the mind and the senses and our, the mixture, the feelings, and it's all, it gets very messy. Unnecessarily. The suffering of living entities in this world is just unnecessary. It's foreign to the soul. It's unnatural. But we so strongly identify with it. There's two pastimes of Srila Prabhupada that coming to mind in this regard. Well, there's several of Prabhupada showed his compassion for others who he just didn't know at all. And certainly in his books he speaks about the innocent different species of life and why should they suffer at our expense unnecessarily, and any compassionate person looks upon those things. There was one I heard recently, not coming back. I sent one out just recently. Prabhupada was in New Vrindavan, and here's two of them. Prabhupada was in New Vrindavan, and he was, class was over, many, many, many devotees were there, and a big kirtan as he's leaving. And right by the entrance of the door, from to the outside, there was a woman, devotee, who didn't have a coat. And it wasn't winter, but it was cold. The Vrindavan is like that. So he stopped. There's the big kirtan, and he turned to Kaladri and said something to the effect that this woman doesn't have a coat. Why is she doesn't have a coat? And he gave some explanation, something, and Prabhupada wasn't okay with it. Make sure that she has a coat. And then he later on indicated that even if the devotees don't come and ask for necessities, once a month you should canvass and find out, hear ye, anybody needs something. And then as administrators, you're to supply it. Then another devotee, Bhagwat Das, told the story that during a morning walk in Mayapur, he stepped on something and it went into his foot, a thorn or something. And but he wanted to stay with Prabhupada, so he kept walking and walking, and it was painful. And then Prabhupada, after the walk, had come to take darshan of the deity, and then the thing of going around three times, ringing the bell, and the devotees dancing enthusiastically. And so then he went to sit on the Vyasasan. So here's Prabhupada with hundreds of devotees, roaring kirtan, joyful like anything, and Bhagavat is limping. Normally he would be dancing with everybody else. Right in the midst of the kirtan's still going, he just motioned to Bhagavat to come over and asked him, "Did you hurt your foot?" He said, "Yes, Prabhupada." He said, then Prabhupada took a piece of paper from his, right in the middle of the kirtan, took a piece of paper from his pocket, wrote down and folded it over and put some rupees in and said, "Go get the medicine to take care of your foot." And when Bhagavat told the story, you can't tell the story without crying. Because it's just, Prabhupada wasn't thinking about, "Oh, I'm being appreciated." He was thinking of somebody's foot and the necessity of some that taking care. Many, many such examples. So, on the one hand, looks like concerned with the body. And then Hari Sori told another story where the devotees were riding on the Delhi Agra road going to Vrindavan. I forget which way it was, going back or coming. And the driver was pushed to Krishna Swami. And pushed to Krishna was driving really fast. And Prabhupada kept telling him, "Drive slow, you Americans, you drive too fast." And then somewhere down the road, those of you that have seen this know what I'm speaking about, there was an accident. And they don't have ambulances and all the, you know, the rigmarole they have here. Someone's body was strewn out in different bodily parts hanging here and there, and the car was mangled, and I know the devotees in the car were, you know, gawking out the window, and Prabhupada just was fixed and just chanting Hare Krishna mantra. Just, you know, didn't show any of the emotion that the other devotees were showing. Hari Sori's comment was, while on the one hand Prabhupada was very, very compassionate, on the other hand he didn't identify with the body. Someone's destiny has been met and the soul has moved on to another situation. Something similar to here. Tasmana karya santraso. One should not, santraso means horror. One should not look upon death with horror. It doesn't mean you do something foolish, because the body can be used in service to Krishna, so you take care of it. But when it's time for the body to go, it's time for the body to go. And if it's time to get another one, you get another one. If it's time to go some other place, you go some other place. So it's just a continuous stream. Detachment is the result of attachment to service, to the Supreme, because service will go on in any case in the spiritual or the material realm, because we're constitutionally servants. The real position of detachment, as he's identifying here, or renunciation, is renunciation of the material conception and accepting of the spiritual conception. That is, I'm an eternal servant, and my renunciation is attachment to Krishna. That means attachment to Krishna's service. And then that's the detachment, renunciation. Detachment from worldly things. That's the fruit of all this discussion. Kapila's Sankhya philosophy. Knowledge leads to detachment, but not just knowledge alone, but the transcendental knowledge is attachment to the Supreme. leads to detachment from matter. Same as the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, what is called renunciation is the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. And Prabhupada explains the same principle as in this purport. Attachment to the Supreme is the essence of detachment from matter. Real renunciation is attachment to the Supreme. And therefore, in that attachment to the Supreme position, one can be whatever varna and whatever ashram. One can be a transcendentalist in any position based upon one's attachment to the Supreme or linking with the Supreme through devotional service. Okay, so I'll end with that and see if there's some discussion. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was first trying to understand the meaning for this first answer. That's my first comment, right? So we have to first renounce the misconception what we have related to the body as to the soul. So in that case, we have three ashrams, but still we have even if we don't have any misconception, but still we have like varna ashram and grihastha ashram. So is that?
I'm not following your question. Just don't do the whole thing. Just do the last part again. You're in an ashram.
Yeah, varna ashram.
Okay, you're a grihastha. Yeah. And you live in a home, you have utensils in your kitchen, you have clothes in your closet, you have a car in your garage, you have stuff. Now, what's your question?
So there are three ashrams. Four ashrams. So why we go for the four ashrams when we have this, when everybody has that?
Your question is very unclear. Maybe are you asking is there another position where one is beyond the four varnas and one doesn't have any designation whatsoever, and prior to that we're cultivating detachment from the sense of possessiveness in an ashram specific ways suitable to our nature? Is that what you're asking?
My question is initially, we identify the body as a soul, all that misconception. So by the scriptures.
Slow down. We identify the body of the soul.
No, as.
As the soul.
Yeah, as a misconception.
As the self. Okay.
So now we know by all the scriptures.
There's knowledge, but we're not there. There's what we know, and there's where we are.
So when we remove the misconception, and identifying the soul as soul and body is different from the soul and everything. So we have to still have that ashram, that three, four different ashrams. Is that?
It's not three, four. It's four.
It's four.
It depends. There's a stage where one is beyond the four varnas and ashrams, like discussing yesterday evening. The Navayogendras, they were in that category. They were not one of the four ashrams or the four varnas. They're beyond that. So that's a possibility. Like the Goswamis, they weren't just sannyasis. They were in the Paramahamsa stage. We couldn't say they're in this ashram or that ashram or this varna or that varna. They're in the Paramahamsa stage. Or another option is one can be situated in one of the varnas or one of the ashrams and be transcendentally situated, but acting in that position for setting an example. And then there's us, where we're taking some position in order to become purified and qualified. But your question specifically is one who goes beyond the bodily conception, do they still require? And the answer is, they can take up this Paramahamsa stage, or they can, as Krishna is advising Arjuna, you set example. When you become perfected, you stay in that position and show by example, here's how you do it. We're okay? Okay. Yes, next? Yeah.
So, when the soul leaves the body, we do samskara for the body, even though...
The samskara is not for the body. The samskara is for the departed soul.
What's the meaning and why we do that?
Making the passage of the soul auspicious, removing of obstacles and creating auspiciousness for the passage of the soul to next destination. Samskaras are performed at each stage of life. The language of some traditions is rites of passage. You heard that term before? Rites or rituals of passage. When the soul moves from this to that, from that to the next, and from the next to the next one. That's when samskaras are performed. So the soul, similar to this description, conception. When the soul becomes conscious, when the soul takes birth, when the soul takes the first grain, not just depending upon the body of the mother's nourishment, but something from outside, grain. And, it's passage of the soul from this to that. So death is the same. It's the passage of the soul from something to something else, creating auspiciousness and removing obstacles. Okay?
Maharaj, I was wondering how do people respond when you tell them to renounce the misconception that they have bodily possessions in their house?
They get whiplash. That's what happens. But then it just gives an opportunity to explain it. And then they're still trying to figure it out. Because it's completely new thing that I own something is a misconception. What do you mean? It's not mine. It's mine. So it takes a little bit to get them to look at how it is that it's not theirs. The logic is simple, but adopting that logic and living by it is difficult because of attachment. You enter the world owning nothing, you leave the world owning nothing. So what is in between? It's a false sense of proprietorship. To what's really mine. If it's taken from me, is it really mine? If involuntarily something is taken from me, and it always happens, and it's inevitable to happen, what can I say is mine? Logic is there, but the application of the logic is something else. Yes.
Does the soul remember the body?
Does the soul remember the body?
Yeah. So does it relate to the body, or Does the soul keep account of like how many births it takes?
No. The information is stored within the mind, but it's not. There's not generally access to those files.
Does not carry it over.
The soul, the mind carries those impressions. It's not on the soul level. It's on the mind level. Mind carries impressions.
Okay, and one more question is on the misconception. And is this something wrong? Like, this is my duty, and I'm attached to my duty. Thinking of this is my duty. Is it a misconception?
Here's a Prabhupada said on that one. Prabhupada, is it okay if you're attached to your duty? And Prabhupada's reply was, yes, you should be attached to your duty, unless or until the spiritual master changes your duty. And then you become detached and become attached to the new duty. So the force behind the attachment is carrying out the instructions, not the duty itself. Clear?
So the duty changes.
The attachment should go to sat, not to asat. Is it okay to be attached to asat? No. Be attached to sat. If sat indicates this is your duty, this is your service, be attached to the service in the sense that it's the fulfillment of an instruction. Anything else? Yes. What do you answer? what's the answer you give? No, we don't. I don't know. Yes, we do. All of the above. What's the answer you give?
The standard is like you ask, we'll get back to you.
What?
We will get back to you. Like you.
That's what you tell them. I'm going to go look it up and I'll let you know later. That's what you tell them?
Yeah, I don't know exactly.
And that specific question, what do you tell them?
It's just like waking up from sleep. That's the answer I have. If you go to Vaikuntha,
maybe
she has...
No, I'm asking you.
Okay. Like if we go to Vaikuntha, whatever we have experienced here is just like waking up from sleep. That's
So do you remember your dreams? Is that what they're asking? Yeah, they don't take it that far.
They don't take it that far.
Okay. The indication that Prabhupada gave is that spiritual relationships are eternal. Spiritual relationships are eternal. But spiritual relationships are not based upon the body. So based upon the body, this may be a relative, or that one is a relative, based upon the body. When the body's gone, there's relation, but not based upon the body. That's not my relative, my uncle or my whatever it is, sister, brother, mother, father, child. Not like that. But soul to soul, spiritual relationships are eternal. It's a whole other set of rules, in other words. Relation, yes, but not based upon the body. And based upon the body is now something, but it's not the same something. But spiritual relationship, because it's eternal. Now, what shape that takes, that's up to Krishna. The way that that is manifested, I mean to say. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.